We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have 10 times the cash tickets, but I got these Pac-Man tickets that are coming my way. It's been a little while. We did Cup of Super Bowl for all the charities a few weeks ago. I've been working on this 25th anniversary documentary, and my guest is going to be featured in a cameo performance as well in my 25th anniversary documentary. I'm really looking forward. I wore royal blue because the Royals are in town this week, and I want to give Jeff Montgomery some love. But on Tuesday, we're going to be at Costas all day having crab cakes before the Orioles-Red Sox game at 2 o'clock. And when the Key Bridge went down last week, Costas is on the peninsula that's trapped a little bit. You can't get to it. It's a little harder. So we're going to give them some extra local loving. And we're going to be doing that on Tuesday to kick off the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Also on Friday, we'll be at Fadley's before the afternoon game on the evening game on the 12th. We'll be there from 2 until 5, live from 2 until 3 with Luke. So come on down. And the all-new Fadley's in the all-new Lexington Market. Everything's new. But there are these things in sports that I just love, and they're these old friendships. And, man, when I realized Jeff Montgomery and I have been knowing each other for 32 years, and Jeff, I'm doing this documentary, and it's really a 25th documentary for the station, but my career's year 33 now. You met me. I had a little show called the Sports Forum, Budweiser Sports Forum. You wore my shirt. The shirt got in the Kansas City Star. You sent me clips. We wound up going to lunch for years, Kiss concert stuff. And all these years later, you're like an entrepreneur with an AM radio station, and I'm a washed-up host from Dundalk with an AM radio station. It is so good to that you always make time, and you're here, and you're still a broadcaster and all that good stuff. But change is a-blowing here in the Charm City, Monty. We're under new ownership. It's something, huh?
Well, I've been tracking you for a long time through LinkedIn or whatever outlet it may be, and I can tell the enthusiasm, the excitement. Long before it happened, you had a good feeling that there was going to be some changes, and sure enough, it's happened. I think it's great for Orioles baseball. It's good for Major League Baseball.
Well, let's talk about that at the greater length of this. I mean, you were in Kansas City, good times, bad times. They had some money, signed some players when you were there. You know, you were paid fairly. You stayed. Didn't happen. But it wanted it to happen, and it happened for Saberhagen. It happened for, you know, your generation and Brett. It was very similar markets in that way. And I think, and you know of my love of George Brett. I don't even need to tell you. You know, I have very few bobbleheads, or I revere very few. I wash my dishes every night without gloves. And I always say to my wife, I'm like Brett. I don't wear gloves. I just I do the dishes. So, but you know, really bad times. I mean, you and I have known each other 30 years, most of the years to the baseball in both of our towns, right? Like for the most part, but there's that period where we got together now, man, going on, you know, 10 years ago where you were really good. We were really good. It didn't happen for us. It happened for you. You had that moment, that huge, now the Chiefs have done this again and again and again. And the baseball side, here's the Ravens have done it a couple of times. And you and I have been at this forever in the same business of sports media and sports radio. When the tectonic plates shift for ownership, things really change. And ownership's never changed on the football side in your town. And in the baseball side, maybe you can talk about that, because there's times when you just don't have enough money to have the players you want. But that doesn't mean you let the thing go to hell in a handbasket either.
Well, I think when you're a small to mid-sized market, you have to be smart about it, because you can't just write a check and take care of the issues that you may have with regards to your roster. So in Kansas City, we've had three owners. We're on our third owner now. Our founding owner was Ewan Kaufman, who the ballpark is now named after. And by the way, there's going to be a vote coming up very soon on having a new downtown ballpark. And Camden Yards is one that's always cited as an example of what moving a ballpark, you know, to a downtown area can do for a city. And I've talked numerous times about Camden Yards and how special that was, and how special that was to me, even going back to the 93 All-Star game. So anyway, our first owner, he was ill back in the late 90s, toward the end of my baseball career. He essentially gave the team to the city. He didn't sell the team. He gave the team to the Kansas City Foundation, and then
you
their
were a
job
player at
was.
this time. I want to paint the real history here, because I want people to understand that we all struggle with these ownership things. And I've written a book on Peter and Hofberger before that with beer, and Edward Bennett Williams is the one that saved the team really for Baltimore, and Larry Lucchino, who went on to San Diego, Boston, and won things. But my understanding of Ewing Kaufman, and correct me if I'm wrong, is my man George Brett, my all-time favorite player as a child, along with Cesar Lescano and Tony Gwynn as I got a little older, and you, of course, Monty. But did he not shake hands with George Brett every year on contracts, or am I nuts? Is that a fable, or am I remembering that wrong?
He basically gave George a lifetime contract. George Brett, Willie Wilson, and Dan Quisenberry all were given lifetime contracts. He basically gave them, long-term deals. And by the end of their contracts, they essentially were, they were underpaid. But he took care of George. And a lot of the players who are kind of this fundamental, the real key players to the franchise. So he was a great owner.
During a time when owners fought with players famously, and players left, and free agency. I don't say free agency never came to Kansas City during that era, Freddie Patek and Buddy Biancolana and all that. It did, but it didn't come in the way it came to Baltimore. We had the rude awakening during that
right.
era. And when you were a kid, you were the same age. You know, Don Baylor, Bobby Gritch, the Senseis, Reggie Jackson. We had a cold shower of free agency here in the 70s and still won despite all of that, because we had geniuses, Hank Peters on the baseball side, and Earl Weaver and the Oriole way and all of that. But all of that sort of that old world baseball, that's how Kansas City was reared. There was a Royals way. There was an Academy, Frank White, like all of that, like really the embryonic part of what we would know. But baseball was hostile back then amongst owners and players. Very, very hostile.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the difference between that era and now is the fact that our owner, Ewing Kaufman, he didn't care if he made money in baseball. In fact, he would write a check every year for the team's losses. But back then, the check was, maybe $5 million worth of losses. Now, if you want to try to compete with today's payrolls and you don't put people in the stands, that check would be devastating. Regardless of your level of wealth, you would lose a whole lot of money, a lot more money than anybody would want to write a check for to cover losses. So when things changed, and I think it really kind of started after the strike of 94, 95, when the payrolls really started to escalate, that's when things changed. And that was right about the time when Mr. Kaufman had passed away. He passed away in 1993. So our team was essentially held in a foundation and kind of ran by a board of directors, or there was essentially no owner. And by the end of the decade, around 1999, David Glass, who was a former CEO of the Walmart enterprise, he was the winning bidder on buying the team. So David Glass bought the Royals around 1999 and had the team all the way up to about 3 years ago when he passed away. But when he came in, he tried to everyone thought he was cheap. This team's run by the guy who ran Walmart, but he really was exactly opposite. He was willing to spend money, but he wanted to do it the right way. So he went out, he got a general manager named Dayton Moore, brought him over from the Atlanta Braves. And that was in 2006. Mr. Glass said, spend whatever money you need to spend to develop a winning franchise. So they weren't spending money at the major league level, but they were spending more money than any team in baseball on the amateur draft and on the minor leagues to build these players. And it took it. And when he took the job, when
all these years, every year when the Orioles would come in 06, 07, I'm on the air, you come on, we're building it. We're seeing, we're trying, we don't have as much money. I mean, it was the whole thing. We would always be talking about these things because they're so fundamental when you own a sports radio station. 100 lost baseball seasons, it's not good radio. It's not good anything. No. It's not good. It's bad for everything. It's awful.
It's right. Well, when Dayton Moore took the job, I remember his initial press conference. He basically said, look, you're not going to like what I'm going to tell you, but this is going to take me about 8 years to build a team. And sure enough, in 2014, the Royals went to their first postseason in 29 years since the 85 World Championship team. They go to the World Series. They lose the World Series on take it to game seven, and then they go back the following year and they win a World Series. So it was really transformational for the franchise. But then what happens, like I said, you have to be very wise on how you spend your money. The key players, the Lorenzo Cain's, the Mike Moustakas's, the Eric Hosmer's, those guys all became free agents at the same time and all landed really significant contracts, which, it kind of took Kansas City out of the possibility of keeping those players. So then you go through this next cycle, and that's really kind of where the team is now. And hopeful to do what the Orioles did. I mean, I think you go back to what, in 2021, the Orioles lost well over 100 games. Last year, they won over 100 games. So with the right players, the right drafts, you can make those things happen. And that's really what the Royals are going through right now.
Dude, with all this rain, you and I might be bellied up to the bar at Costas eating crabs knuckles deep tonight talking about this stuff, but I want to pretend it's just you and me eating crabs and we're knuckles deep talking about this stuff, because I've known you a long time. It's just serendipitous that, like, we're starting the season and this ownership and all of this stuff. I don't know as much. They took my press pass 18 years ago. I was explaining to one of David Rubenstein, the new owners, why I'm not allowed in press conferences with a governor I helped elect and like all of that stuff last week. So it's sticky for me on that side. But the one thing I know enough about, having been boxed out, is how much the game has changed and how much a guy like you, who's my age, who grew up thinking one way about baseball and has all the same baseball memories before you were a Royal and, running around Cincinnati and the big red machine. And I was just in Lakeland, Florida, passed through there, and I heard the voice of Sparky Anderson over there on the bench talking to me after a game. I have all of these baseball memories, but I have a feeling if they give me my press credential back, and I go back, and I saw Mike Elias down in Fort Myers 2 weeks ago. I went down for spring training for a couple of games and had some fun because I love that. I thought of you when I drove through Haines City and Baseball City.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned you to Luke Jones when I came up to Orlando. So I have all these great memories about all of this, but the game from an analytics standpoint and these geniuses that Mike Elias and Sig Meidel and what they've done here in the modern era and how they can fix pitchers and how they – the everything is measured, spin rate, all the science of this. Guys like you that have made it through the rain to the other side here and are still doing the broadcast and a part of this, and Palmer and Ben McDonald and hearing them talk about it, guys I've known forever, talk about the evolution of the game. If we're having crabs tonight, what would you tell me about the evolution of the game that you've discovered? Because it feels like Star Trek-y. If my dad were resurrected right now and watched the broadcast and heard the way the launch angle, all of these metrics that have really changed the science of the game. And when I see the Orioles' success in these players that they've resurrected, I see it a lot as the genius of the measurement and that they're doing something special here, these guys in Baltimore. They really are.
Yeah, and I think every team has a different approach or maybe a different philosophy regarding the analytics and the technology side of the game. I think everyone has to use it to some degree, because if you don't, you're really handicapping yourself. But I think the game's finally getting back to a good place. And the reason I say that, I think the game went through a period of time when it was not a good game. The games were long. They were boring. It was a strikeout, a walk, or a home run. And, really good players, especially left-handed batters, were not rewarded for what we would call traditional success in baseball by hitting line drives to the right side. Hey, now you got five guys lined up over on the right side, a base hit to the right field. Now it's an out at first base. And, the games were lasting so long because, I think with the launch angle, that information, that technology, and the shifting that was done, I think it really changed players' approaches to the game. And I think it took the game to a really bad place. I think the changes Major League Baseball has made over the last few years has kind of put it back to where it's a more exciting game. We played an 11-0 game yesterday, and it was 2 hours and 25 minutes. And, it's refreshing to go to a game now and see the pace of the play. And I don't think the pitch clock, I really would have never thought the pitch clock would be something that I would like, but I really like it as a broadcaster because it just keeps the thing going. And I think everyone's adapted to it. They've had it in the minor leagues for a long time. Last year, it seemed like after the first couple of weeks, everybody really adapted quite easily to that. So I just think the game is getting back to where more action, more stolen bases, more hit and run, more of the things that we grew up watching in baseball. And I think the younger generation, they will have a much better chance of growing into baseball fans than they would have, say, 5, 6, 7 years ago. But I think that launch angle, it hurt the game a lot because players said, hey, if I can hit a ball to the ballpark, I'm going to be rewarded. If I hit a line drive to right field, it's probably going to be an out. So I'm just going to try to launch the baseball. As a result, the strikeouts had an enormous, rise with regards to the numbers. 20 years ago, if you struck out 100 times a season, you're probably out of work. And no longer is a strikeout even thought of as that necessarily that bad of a thing. So it's changed dramatically. But I like where it's getting to now.
Well, even the science here in Baltimore, where back when you were a relief pitcher, and I always famously tell the story of Messina and all the courting that went on in the late 90s and saying, you got to get out of this ballpark. It's 364 into the out. You got to get out of this ballpark. I mean, a pop-up's a home run, summer nights, the humidity in the ballpark. It's not Colorado, but it's the next best step. They move the fences out. In the same way that before you were in Kansas City in the 80s, when Willie Wilson and Brett were there, the alleys and the speed of the track and the carpet and the triples and triples and triples that always got hit in Royal Stadium. And then you play to that. You play with Frank White and you play with Al McRae and you play with guys that slap the ball that way and you win. And you win World Series that way. There is some home field advantage, and there are some things that these geniuses that have taken over. And I'll tell you what. John Angelos, if I give him a parting shot on the way out the door for the $1.7 billion his family got as Peter Angelos died last week as well, they left baseball geniuses here, and these guys that run the place have measured even the outfield wall to push it back to make it more attractive that maybe a guy like you would sign here or being able to keep a pitcher here. I don't know what it means for hitting, but I know that it's going to help the pitching situation if they move the wall back and they've gotten good and they don't play the Yankees 17 times, home and away every year now that it's more balanced across the league. There's all sorts of things that really are going to help the Baltimore Orioles the next couple of years here that we can't help but get excited about, Monty.
Well, and that's another thing that I think was really wise for baseball to do when it went back to the balanced schedule last year. And it's more fair. And I think, being in our division, it made things more difficult for the Royals because now we got to play the Los Angeles Dodgers every year. Now we have to play, those really good teams every season, whereas some years you would have that. If you're going to play the East or the West or the Central, whatever it might be, you've got an advantage over some other teams because you're playing, one, you're playing teams in your division, and two, you're playing maybe some weaker teams in some of the other divisions that some of your competitors don't have to play against. So I think the scheduling was another really good thing, but I've kept my eye on the Orioles. I've told you this before. I grew up, my little league team was the Orioles. And I still have my Little League hat, my Orioles hat. And so I've always kept my eye on the Orioles. And it's just been fun to watch what they've been able to do over the last few years.
Were you a Brooks guy? Are you Eddie, Cal? What were you?
Jim Palmer. I loved Jim Palmer. One of my coaches in Kansas City was Pat Dobson. So
You got good stories with Dobber, huh?
Oh, yeah. He was the best.
Now, Jeff Montgomery's our guest. He's still calling games. It's called Bally's now. It used to be called Fox West, I believe, or South. I'm not even sure.
Fox Sports Kansas City. Now we're Bally Sports Kansas City.
All right, regional sports now. I wore Royals blue for you, my Raskin Global gear here. So I'm trying to bring – tell me about your sports radio station and tell folks what they need to know about that sort of thing because people ask me about it all the time. And, our website and the reach – and I'm doing this 25th anniversary documentary, but we have 100,000 people to follow everything we do. We have millions of views on YouTube. We have millions of impressions and downloads and Twitters and Facebook and social media influence. Boy, the world's changing. I don't know how much it changes in Kansas City where it's a little bit more, I don't want to say sheltered, but a little bit more like in the Midwest and you drive so far and then there are cows. We're a little bit more like you can go all the way to Columbia and not, have an hour and a half and not a whole lot going on. But for television and for the internet, and then there's AM radio, which I had to chuckle. I was watching the game on Sunday, and on the pitcher's mound, they have an ad. Sometimes it's Royal Farms or Wise, some of my sponsors, but they had a little WBAL radio AM ad on there. And I'm like, yeah, bring some people to the AM dial, won't you? Come on. We need more people on our side of the dial.
Yeah, I got involved in radio when I was still actually a player with the Royals. It was 1997, and a friend of mine who was had spearheaded a group to purchase a small daytime only radio station in Kansas City asked me if I'd be interested in being part of it. And I'm like, gosh, I've never really done anything outside of the, basically mutual funds and stocks. And I said, tell me more about it. I had a good friend who was in sales with on the radio side with a classic rock station, a real good friend of mine. I talked with him and he said, yeah, he goes, we're the largest market in the United States without a dedicated full-time sports radio station. We had sports on an AM talk station from 3 to 6 Monday through Friday. That was the only sports that we had on the radio. So I'm like, you know what? That sounds like a great opportunity. So I invested along with about a half dozen other guys. We bought this little station. Within a year, we sold out all of our inventory because it was a daytimer. And we sold out all of our inventory and had people banging on the door wanting to advertise in sports. So we bought a large 50,000 watt stations, WHB 810 AM. And we bought that and just grew it and grew it. It's the largest sports radio station in the country with regards to the amount of coverage. We cover 44,000 square miles, so it's a gigantic station. Five states it covers, and fortunately we have a lot of college sports with the University of Kansas, University of Missouri, Kansas State University. We have the Royals. We have the Chiefs. We have soccer, men and women's soccer, professional in Kansas City. So we've got a nice opportunity with regards to our stations. We eventually expanded to Louisville, Kentucky, and also Wichita, Kansas. So we have a kind of an array of stations now, and they've done quite well. And one thing that's a nice boost for us, and I'm sure a lot of people in sports radio and even television sports, was gambling is now legalized in the state of Kansas. So we have a lot of advertisers that are on board with that.
Jeff Montgomery is here. He used to pitch in the big leagues. Now he still broadcasts about the big leagues. He's trapped somewhere in between raindrops here in Baltimore. And I guess I want to go full circle back to Glass and back to ownership and you surviving these transitions and being in a shoulder business that sometimes they throw you out. In my case, if you're Peter Angelos, because you think you're competing or I'm spilling dirty laundry about a team that was in last place for 14 years in a row. Kind of hard to do. My last name's Aparicio. I love baseball. I come at this sort of honestly. These new owners, I'm feeling out what's going on with them. This guy's a billionaire. It's a different game for him. I met one of his partners on opening day, but we're 5 days into this. People keep coming up to me. Am I getting my press pass back? I don't know. I just met these people. I feel like if they're good people and they'll let me back in. And I also saw the empty seats on Saturday and Sunday. Opening day comes and it goes, and then it's a sea of forest green and empty seats, and tickets are $9. And then you have to like drum up interest for people to come downtown into a challenge community. Bad weather as we're experiencing here the next couple of days. Do I want to go to the game tonight? No, I'm looking out the window and it's awful and it's wet and it's cold and I don't, but all that being said, advice. So I am in my own way getting my own thing together as I do this documentary, as March Madness goes away and I watch the ladies shoot and fight and do all they're doing. We have WrestleMania this week. We have the NFL draft and we draft 30th because we choked up the AFC Championship game. Oh yeah, to you guys. That's right. I should be more mad at you. We'll get to that in a minute on the football side. But we are in an interesting place here, Monty. Now I'll give you this. I mean, you and I are old farts at this point. We've never had a year like this. I've owned sports radio station for 25 years. I've been on the air 33 seasons. The first five, we didn't have a football team here. That's how far back I'm going. So 92, 3, 4, 5, we didn't have a team, right? So all of this change, and I get my gray going on in here. This is the only time ever we won 101 games in baseball, 13-4. AFC Championship game, first time he hosted that game since 1971 with the Colts, also blue and white. And won the division going away last year. We've never had this prosperity here since 1971's last time that happened, where both teams won. And this new owner comes in. Peter died the same week. John's gone. The check's in the mail. Masson's delivered. It's all like, and this guy either knows what he's doing or doesn't know what he's doing. He's certainly a fan. What advice do you give to a billionaire that flies into this, who may or may not know his ass from his elbow in regard to sports, media, local business? They make their money in a different place, in a different way. He's 5 days into owning the team. I don't, if it were me or you, I don't know how we'd handle it or what we would do first or what we would do last, but there's a lot to do owning a baseball team and coming into a situation that has been, as I told his associate the other day, terrorizing and traumatizing, specifically in Baltimore, because of the man who owned it before and what it represented when you came here for the All-Star game 30 years ago, what it looked like and what you come here every year, Monty, you've seen the bad, the good, and the ugly.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with owning a baseball team, you have to surround yourself with good baseball people. You have to have people who understand, you know, the business side of the sport as well as the personnel. And I think it's really complicated now. I think when I played, there may have been 50 people who were employed by the Royals total, 50 people. Now I think there's like 500. So I mean, it's just an expansion of knowledge. And we got on a plane to fly to Baltimore last night, and there were probably at least a dozen people on the plane that were not, they weren't players, they weren't managers and coaches, they weren't trainers, they weren't broadcasters. They were analytics, they were nutrition, they were sports psychology. It's so complex now with regards to the game and all the personnel involved. But I think owning a team, you have to certainly be willing to bring in good people to make good baseball decisions more than anything. There's a lot of emphasis on, you know, the analytics side, and you have to have that. But I think from a personnel standpoint, scouting and player development, that's where you're going to have long-term success.
I would say, though, everything you just said, that's top of line. And I'd say that for any friend that's fixed. Like, yeah, anything it's got to do with Elias and with Mydell, and the baseball side's fine. Now it's how do you finance, to your point, Moustakas, Hosmer, who are you keeping? Who's Corbin Burnes is now in here. He's pitching for money. And Henderson and Rutschman and Holiday coming. We're talking like generational talent coming in here. This is a hell of a baseball team you're about to see here if we get these games in, Monty.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, there's the decisions that have to be made are really difficult financial decisions. But I think if you're going to, you're going to win by making those right decisions on who to keep. I'll give an example. We just signed our young shortstop, Bobby Witt Jr., to a $288 million contract, one of the largest contracts ever given to a player in baseball. No one would have ever expected the Kansas City Royals to give a young 24-year-old player over a quarter of $1 billion. But they understand that if you're going to win, that guy's going to be the key franchise piece. You have to make sure you have it. I think Rutschman is the guy here that you have to do the same thing with. I think there's just a handful of guys in the game that you say, I can identify this player as my franchise player, and I'm going to make sure that he's going to be here for a long time.
Does the money boggle your mind? I mean, you still sell AM radio ads and FM radio. Like, we still live in the real world. You still go in and right. Know what a gallon of milk costs, even though you sure. Made a few bucks in your day and it sounded like a lot of money when you made it. And maybe it was. You have a nice house in Kansas City. But, like, it's a whole different game when this is the kind of money we're talking about. And certainly on the football side and everything your franchise has been through in recent years, right on up for Taylor Swift showing up, becoming a Chiefs fan, right? Like, I mean, you have seen this incredible sea change from Kansas City when you were a player being yeah, it's a good sports town and they love the Chiefs, but they never win. And we're not really getting a hockey team. We lost the basketball team, but they love the baseball team. And maybe we'll have enough money one day to maybe compete or whatever. You've seen it all. I mean, you're like literally, especially the last 10 years and being in on the sports media entrepreneur side of this, you literally have seen it all in your town and how the money has changed so much that you're talking about you need a new stadium. And I think you have one of the most beautiful complexes ever. But it is on the side of a freeway. It really is. It doesn't really stimulate much of anything.
Right. And that's what's happening. I mean, that's why they want to move our ballpark downtown, because currently you go to the sports complex for a game and that's it. You drive out, you park, you go to the game, you get back in your car and you go home. Now, during football season, with a shorter schedule, it becomes a long, all day long tailgating event. And it's different for those dates that they have during the Chiefs season. But by and large, I think when you look at long term, this is kind of a generational move. When you're thinking of moving a ballpark out of a place it's been for over 50 years into a downtown community, it's going to be very interesting to see if it's able to pass on the ballot coming up here. In fact, tomorrow it's
Oh,
going to be the
wow.
day it gets voted on.
Listen, we lost our basketball team when I was a kid, and the Capital Center got built. And then we almost lost the baseball team after we lost the football team. We had to fight and claw to get a football team back in, where the billionaire owner runs for me now on a porch at the owners' meetings. We have a new baseball owner finally after waiting, waiting, waiting. And I'm trying to figure out what do you even say to a new billionaire baseball owner who flies in to this about making it better? Because to your point, gambling, you see what they've built in Chicago around Wrigley. You see what they've built in Atlanta in the suburbs. You've seen what San Diego, Baltimore, these urban parks and developments have done, Seattle and other places. But, and the promise of it too, in Denver and other places where it's promised. But, and even in Cincinnati, where, you put a flag down. They built a bar district around that thing at the Riverside. All of these different ideas are there, but in the end, like winning and what it means to the community when you win, dude, I've never seen anything like that Royals parade where like the people were spilled out. And then, of course, this year you have a tragedy there at the same function.
Yeah, it was very unfortunate what happened this year. I was actually not in town when that happened. I was broadcasting during the Royals parade, and I think we had about 800,000 people, and it was a beautiful October day, 70-plus degrees, and it couldn't have been any better. But and that's the thing. As far as when you're a sports town, you want to find ways to keep it going, to keep like what the Chiefs have done. I mean, they've been through a lot franchise wise over their history. Back in the 90s, the Chiefs were, they weren't a good team. They weren't a team that was going to be in the postseason. They did some renovations on the stadium. They brought in new revenues. They started signing players, but obviously football, totally different beast with the salary cap. So you gotta be really smart. I don't care which sport you're an owner in. You have to be very smart with how you're able to keep your key players. And I always go back to the core of players you have to have in sports in order to win. Football, to me, you have to have a head coach and a quarterback. If you have those two, that's a good starting point. You throw in a Travis Kelce and a Taylor Swift, that helps as well.
Hey, how are the Royals? Give me 5 minutes on that, because you'll be talking about that the next couple of days here. I mean, we are so oranged up and like ready to roll with new owner. Like, we don't even know who's on the Yankees, let alone who's on the Royals. All we care about is like whether Jackson Holliday was getting here or not. And all I can think of is Matt Holliday, like you, probably trying to figure out how to
Yeah.
get him out.
Well, the Royals have revamped their pitching staff. They had five college kids who they drafted in 2018. They gave them significant opportunities to either prove or disprove their ability to pitch in the major leagues. Really, only one of them is stuck. It's Brady Singer, who pitched yesterday for the Royals, had a brilliant game. So far, our three starting pitchers have given them a total of 2 runs. in about 19 or 20 innings, and we're one win and two losses. We only scored two runs in the first two games. Yesterday, they broke loose with the bats, scored 11. I think the team is going to be a much improved team, coming off a 106 loss season. People think there's a chance in our division, which is not a real strong division, that they can be a contending team. I don't know that I would say that on the air, just because I think you have to compete before you can contend. And I think just becoming a contending team or a competitive team is first. Now, if you're 500 at the All-Star break this year, then, maybe you can dream a little bigger during the second half. But we got a nice core of young players, left side of the infield, two real young players that are going to be around for a long time. They filled in some blanks that we needed in the outfield. Salvador Perez is still our catcher. He'll catch and DH. But the biggest improvement was in the pitching staff. If we play baseball in Baltimore, Michael Wacha will be our starter in the first game. And he's got a nice resume, so to speak, with regards to what he's done in baseball. They brought in Seth Lugo, another established pitcher from the San Diego Padres. We traded Aroldis Chapman last summer for a kid from Texas, from the Texas Ranger named Cole Reagans. He's probably the best starting pitcher in the American League the second half of last season. We've got some nice arms, especially in that rotation. Totally revamped the bullpen. So it's going to be an interesting season. It's really too early to tell, what the returns are going to be.
Well, I have fond hopes that maybe one day I will return to Kansas City on the Kansas and the Missouri side and get some barbecue with you for meaningful October bunting baseball games with full press
that
access.
That would be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. Monty, welcome to Baltimore. Hope we get some baseball in. If not, I have a crab cake in your name waiting for you at the bar. It is always good to catch up with you. I drove with Luke through Baseball City, through Haines City. I drove up from Tampa because I was down there for spring training and all that. And I shed a tear for Baseball City, right? I mean, that was a hell of a concept and a dream, wasn't it? And you got to play there.
Well, I don't know how you compete with Walt Disney, but they gave it a chance. It just didn't work out.
Well, it was down there. I don't know if they tried to compete. I thought it was more of an adjunct. And I thought to myself, it would be great to go have spring training in Baseball City and still be 10 minutes away from Disney World. But I guess the mouse was too much of a draw up the road
for
that.
Exactly.
Yeah, they got cactus out there in Arizona and much less rain. We had a rain out down in Florida. You have to worry about that and lake wherever you guys are in the Goodyear, wherever that place is. Jeff Montgomery can be found anywhere. Good Kansas City baseball is found, as well as his radio station, sports radio station, WHP, now celebrating, I guess, 26 years. If I'm 25 years, he must be 26 years into this. Our 25th anniversary documentary will be coming out, and Monty will be in there at Kauffman Stadium waving from the outfield. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Baseball, the way we love it, it's back in the Charm City. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.